welcome to First Things First. Oh, if you were here for the pep talk that took place about 30 seconds ago, we are excited, ready to do this. Yeah, have another sip. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. You're happy we got a lot of basketball. You're happy we got a lot of football to talk about. Much more fallout from the Anthony Davis trade request. I'm just happy that I'm here in your presence. I just want to make sure y'all know how happy I am. That trade request affects the Lakers. It affects the Knicks. It affects the Celtics. But we are going to start with a big game coming up this Sunday. It is called the Super Bowl. Super Bowl media night, pretty much a free-for-all for anyone credentialed and anyone holding a microphone. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. Every player will be asked everything imaginable. Yesterday, the Rams and Patriots were introduced to the media ahead of Super Bowl 53. And it was Nickell Roby-Coleman who made the biggest news earlier in the day with his comments about Tom Brady. Coleman said this about arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. Age has definitely taken a toll. For him to still be doing it, that's a great compliment for him, but I think that he's definitely not the same quarterback he was. Now, Coleman backtracked a bit when asked about his comments on opening night.
Tom Brady is a great quarterback. I wasn't trying to say nothing bad about him. I respect him as the GOAT. He is the legend, and I think words just got misconstrued. I'm not taking nothing away from his game. I can't take nothing away from his game. This is my first appearance. He's been in this place many of times, in this position many of times. So I'm not going to make a big deal out of this situation. Like I said, words got taken out of context. I respect them. And we're going to go out there on Sunday, and we're going to play football.
You know how you interpret what Roby Coleman said?
Walking it back
just a little bit. All right, Cece, should the Rams be giving Tom Brady bulletin board material ahead of the Super Bowl, given the chip he already seemingly is carrying with him into this game?
Well, I don't think it's bulletin board material. There's a lot of things that transpire during the game. Guys are going to say words to you during the game. So you don't get to the Super Bowl looking for extra motivation. So for me, Tom Brady, the reality, he is 41. He's not as good as he was before. So it wasn't like he made up something. If Tom Brady goes out there, the guy that's participating in the Super Bowl more than anyone else, looking for one little thing to motivate him? No. You know what, Tom Brady? The biggest motivation he's got? He's trying not to leave Atlanta after his ninth Super Bowl appearance being 5-4. That's the biggest thing. He ain't got time to be worrying about anybody trash talking. He ain't got time to be worrying about all this other stuff that have nothing to do with is he going to be able to win the game. No one has more experience than him. No one has more experience in situations like this. People think they don't talk trash to Tom Brady every single week. Yes, we just very seldom hear it. But every single week, guys are gunning for the best player in pro football. And that's Tom Brady. So, no, I don't expect this to be bulletin board material. I don't think Bill Belichick will even mention it again. Now, Edelman, other people, yeah, they might say something. But this is not motivation when you get to this level and you're Tom Brady.
This might sound odd, but if there is ever a situation where for a game and a player that anything you say is not going to have any impact whatsoever, it would be this game, the Super Bowl, and this player, Tom Brady. We can't simultaneously say one of the things that makes Tom Brady the GOAT is that he is as motivated as any player we've seen, works as hard as any player we've seen, that he consistently tries to find the holes in his game to shore them up, stay good at what he's always been great at, and attacks each and every game, each and every season like it could be his last, even though he wants to play till he's 45. And then also say, but now he's going to try harder. Yeah. Prior to Nickell Roby-Coleman doing this, he might have been like, Super Bowl win or lose, whatever it is. If this were a regular season game, we saw during the undefeated season when the Pats, I think probably at times, I don't think they were they had a lack of motivation. It was right after the Spygate scandal and they were trying to stick it to people. But maybe they had midway through the season thought, you know what, we're better than everyone, we're going to be in it at the end of the year.
They were trying to destroy people. They were trying to send a message. That was a season of sending messages.
Sure, but even in that year when Anthony Smith, the Steelers safety popped off, they made a special point, we're going to beat you by 30 anyway, we might as well try to embarrass you as well, kind of motivation within the year. But for the Super Bowl, I've never truly believed in bulletin board material for a Super Bowl. I remember when Michigan played Ohio State, and it was 1-2 over a decade ago, and Bo Schembechler passed away a few days before the game. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And there was this narrative like, oh, my goodness, the Michigan players are going to be so – and I was, and I remember thinking – it's their rival. The winner goes to the championship game. Like, you need additional extra motivation to get you there. To me, this is in the same bucket. Brady's going to be operating at peak motivation level no matter what Nickell Robey-Coleman said.
Now, he will know where he is because he plays a significant role in what they're trying to do defensively. It's no different than Kansas City. When they were in clutch situations outside of throwing to Gronk outside on a slant, where'd they throw the ball? They threw the ball in the slot where the nickelback's going to be. So he knows who he is. He's going to go against them. He doesn't need any motivation in thinking about, oh, this guy's guarding Edelman right now. I'm going to hold the ball and give up another sack when Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh, they got bad intentions. So to think that he's going to be able to do something about this, no. Because if he holds the ball and gets off of his game, it leads into the Rams and being the Rams being successful.
I don't know if it's going to affect how he approaches the game and the X's and O's, but there's this sense, and you have to agree, that there's this sense he's collecting a lot of these interviews, a lot of this negativity, a lot of this, oh, doubt that has been sort of amassed over the course of the season, and he seems to let it go at certain interviews at certain times. So do I think he heard it? Yes. Do I think it is helping to motivate him? Yes. Do I think it's going to change his approach to the game? Well, that I would agree with you and say
no. He heard it. As athletes, we hear everything, but it doesn't motivate you. When you get to a certain height, that's not stuff that you get up in the morning, you're already motivated. We can't think that Tom Brady, everything that we've heard and read about him, taking care of his body, this season was a struggle for him. They lost by double digits 3 times on the road. They got embarrassed, losing in the worst New England way fashion, losing to the Miami Dolphins. It was a struggle. Now, we can't think that the last 2 weeks against the Chargers and against the Kansas City, that's the way the whole season went. No, it wasn't. Tom Brady is focused, and he's got to be, because at this age, he doesn't have the skill or the concentration to be able to say, you know something, I've done this before. This is the most important game of Tom Brady's life. Last Super Bowl he was in, Nick, didn't he lose?
They lost.
Didn't he not fumble the ball late in the game?
It was a strip fumble late. Yeah,
so you think that motivation of trying to redeem the last year's game is bigger motivation than anything else?
Well, Jenna, to your point, what I do think is this. If they win, you're going to have some clip of him running this quote back to Julian Edelman or one of his buddies saying, oh, you know what I mean? Not the player I once was, right? So it's stored in there. The point I think C and I are making is that is something that he might fire back in the glory of winning.
But
it doesn't affect him. It doesn't affect his preparation.
It's impossible. It's impossible to be in your brain in real time. You have all these other things peripheral-wise, but Michael Jordan, in his Hall of Fame speech, he mentioned a lot of stuff. But when he was getting ready to break down Russell, it's not there. And when you have a bye week before the Super Bowl, these are the kind of things that are more time filler than real things as far as the competition.
All right, we'll talk more about this. Eric Mangini is going to stop by to chat with us. But coming up, big news out of the NBA. We're still talking about it. Should the Lakers throw in Lonzo, Kuzma, and Ingram for Anthony Davis? That's next on First Things First. Oh, we got a big week here on First Things First. Deshaun Watson will join us later this morning. Then Saquon Barkley, Matt Ryan, Chris Long, Christian McCaffrey all join us in the next couple days. Big Super Bowl week.
Can't wait.
Stars are out. All right, we'll get to Anthony Davis in a second. But first, a couple of big plays you might have missed from last night's Celtics Nets. Marcus Smart with the slick behind-the-back pass to Terry Rozier.
He had an extraordinary game. The last Celtic to put up the stat line that he put up last night was Larry Bird. No Kyrie last night, and he played really, really well.
No, that's a good that's a good name choice there. Larry Bird. Mm-hmm. You do those basketball references, man. Very impressive. Wow. I used to think that was a bunch of garbage. Very impressive.
Warriors Pacers.
Good garbage.
Steph Curry, behind the back, splits the defense, and then finishes it off with a nice floater.
Steph had a quiet little first half. 9 of 10 from the field, 5 of 5 from three, as the Warriors just dismantled an undermanned Pacers team.
Boogie Cousins. You don't see him in this highlight, but, man, they are tough with him.
And he had a scary moment. It looked like he was seriously injured. He looked like he was emotionally devastated.
You know what it was, Nick? Something you're familiar with. Just clumsy.
That's not clumsy.
No, that's not something you're used to, and that's not clumsy.
This is Oak Ridge forward and Oregon commit C.J. Walker throwing down a 360 through the legs.
All right. This is, I think, the third time this high school basketball season I'm going to say this. I've never seen this dunk before.
That was so impressive. That one caught me off guard. Like, when he went up, I was like, okay, what's he going to do? No. He didn't go between his legs in game.
Hold on. Zion in a highlight machine. Check out the ridiculous block against Notre Dame.
And this wasn't even his best defensive play of the night. When he just ate up the Notre Dame player on the other end of the court later in the game. Zion.
The ramifications from this is anyone who potentially can have the first pick, that's why the Pelicans have to listen to it. Because this guy could be at the end of that trade. Yeah, give me this player, NBA, give me. But whoever has that first pick, Pelicans, you need to get some of that off in your life.
The most surefire first overall pick since.
Now, he might be 600 pounds living in New Orleans.
Since this guy. Go ahead, Jenna.
Here we go. The big story out of the NBA yesterday. Anthony Davis requesting a trade from the Pelicans. The assumption by many is that the Lakers are the front runners to retain his services should they be able to pull off a trade with New Orleans. According to reports, the Lakers' offer would have to start with Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Ivica Zubac, and a first-round pick. All right, Nick, there's a lot of back and forth on Twitter with a lot of potential trades and parties in the trade. What do you make of this potential trade package?
It's not enough. The New Orleans Pelicans would not accept that. No. Where you're only including two of your top three young players. Zubac, amazing. Credit to Zubac for how he's played in the last month to make himself a fourth young asset for the Lakers, because the beginning of the year he would have just been a throw-in. But you're not including all your assets, and you're only including one first-round pick. New Orleans will not do that deal. New Orleans, if that is the best offer the Lakers make, New Orleans will wait until this summer, until they know who has the number one pick, until they know the Celtics can get in the game. Yep. They will. If the Lakers have to overpay, and I don't even know if it's possible to overpay for a player of this caliber, but they have to pay full sticker plus 20%. In order to dissuade the Celtics from waiting on, what if the Knicks land the number one pick? What if the Celtics want to trade everybody? Like, you have to get in the game, and the way you get in the game is you say to the Celtics, if it works with the cap, who on our roster do you want, not named LeBron James? We'll make it happen.
Yeah, and that's the way it's got to go, and it's because it's in two parts. One is this 10-day window. Magic Johnson and them, in some kind of form or fashion, the plan to build a land LeBron James was the largest domino in the NBA. They did that. The next step is to land a superstar without wasting a season with LeBron. Now it's on board. AD, I believe privately, he would not allow Rich Paul and Clutch Sports to announce this when they wanted to. Because once he signed with Clutch Sports, it was inevitable which day we're going to get to this. Was it going to be in June, or was it going to be right before the trade deadline? We're here now. And the Lakers have this 10-day window that they could try to take advantage of, because they don't have the same assets as either being the Knicks potentially, because they might add Kristaps. They might put Kristaps in there, and with that number one pick, and the Celtics this summer. So right now is the best time for the Lakers to put their best offer, and it is everything that we have. Just give me my driver's license so in case I need to fly.
Did we go through this already when the Lakers maybe didn't put enough out there for Paul George, didn't put enough out there for Kawhi Leonard, figured they would wait, and then ended up not getting either of them, assuming both of them would come?
So they definitely didn't put enough out there for Paul George, assuming he would come. Now, I had been saying they didn't put enough out there for Kawhi. I got a little pushback saying, listen, it's not that we didn't put enough out there. It's that the Spurs were not trading him to the Lakers.
Right, absolutely.
And so they think that's an unfair characterization of their offer. But it
That is true. And in having conversations with people in the know, Popovich told Kawhi, because him and Kawhi still had a relationship even though people didn't realize. He told Kawhi, I'm obligated to do what's best for the organization. I like you. I'm going to try to take care of you. But the organization is the number one priority.
And the Lakers and Spurs have been the two top teams prior to the Warriors' emergence in this in the Western Conference for the better part of two decades. You could argue for the better part of two and a half decades.
Well, so Paul George.
But certainly what happened with Paul George. And there is another element to this that people need to understand. So I'm going to show you in a moment the trade I would propose. The other, because everyone's going to include Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's expiring deal in their trade proposals. You should not do that. And the Lakers don't want to do that. Not because they think KCP is a great player. They want to keep KCP on the books. So if they trade for Anthony Davis, they have the ability this summer to have another superstar.
You'll have that money.
To have $30 million in cap space to offer up to Anthony Davis's good friend, Kyrie Irving. To offer up maybe to Kawhi Leonard if he didn't want to take the full boat max. To offer up, I know at some point we're going to talk about Klay Thompson. So this trade right here, this is the one Magic should offer. And I would imagine he already has. You get all four of our young guys. Lonzo, Ingram, Kuz, Zubats. You get Lance just to make the money work.
Right, just for the books.
It's a throw-in to make the money work. And two unprotected first-round picks. I give you the 19 and the 21 because those picks are going to be in the mid to late 20s as long as I have LeBron and Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. The other thing that does, Anthony Davis is going to have to turn down, if we're going to get into the weeds, his 15% trade kicker. Let's assume he does. He makes $27 million. LeBron makes $37 million. You got a $5 million Luol Deng dead money on there, and then you got Josh Hart's money, a couple other players. You're at $72 million. That leaves you $31 million if you want to go big fish or, you know, big fish fishing, sorry, whatever, the hunting analogy is.
Yes.
You can still go do it. If you do these other trades people are proposing where you include Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, then you are restricted this upcoming offseason into that second or third tier player. And even if you don't think you can get Kyrie, Kimba's out there. There are other guys. So that trade right there is the one the Lakers, I believe, are going to offer. It doesn't mean New Orleans got to take it. New Orleans can still wait. But that's the best offer the Lakers can make.
And it doesn't seem like that offer would change too much between now and this summer.
No, that's everything they can offer. For the Lakers, that's everything they can offer.
You mentioned Klay Thompson. There is a report, CC, that Klay Thompson would be interested. He's a free agent after the season. Would be interested in joining the Lakers if the Brow join the Lakers as well. What do you think about that?
I mean, there would be so many other players. LeBron is attractive. Like, he's attractive in L.A. But L.A., man, the last 5 years, man, they got one of the worst basketball records in the NBA. So the history of the Lakers and the young players in the NBA, it's not the pool that the Lakers have on people that have been around and seen basketball over the last 20 years. So you need someone opposite of LeBron, and someone like the Brow is a generational talent, and he's young. Man, you could do this for a long
25.
Time. Like, you can have nights off. You got the Brow. You can ride him. LeBron, I believe if he gets the Brow, not like any other player, it will extend LeBron's career. Because ultimately, I want LeBron to look like Magic Johnson and play a slower pace, a big point guard. And you would need someone like the Brow to be either have the post offense and the pick and roll. And I just believe, man, if they get the Brow, it's important. They trade everything because I believe it makes LeBron's longevity even longer.
And to that point, Klay, to bounce off what you're saying, Klay is the perfect complement to that, a guy who can knock down shots. Now, I want to be clear on this. This report had a caveat, which was if the Warriors do not offer Klay the full max, then he would be interested in going to the Lakers where his dad played and where there's some family legacy. The Warriors would be categorically insane to not offer Klay the full max. They're about to move into a new arena in San Francisco where they can print money. Like, if they screw this up and they're worried, those billionaire owners they've got, about to have a billionaire row of celebrity fans in Silicon Valley, if they are worried about the luxury tax and don't offer Klay the full amount, they're nuts. But for the Lakers, it doesn't end with Klay. Oddly enough, it's all these K free agents. Klay, Kyrie, Kimba, Kawhi, maybe Kevin and Kevin Durant. That's a weird coincidence. But they will be after Kyrie Irving. They will, if they miss on him, they will be after Kemba Walker and Kawhi Leonard, of course, as well. We know they are after. But they can do all of it if they trade for Anthony Davis and if they make the right trade for Anthony Davis. But Klay is, you see, we've talked about this. Klay, basketball-wise, is a perfect fit for LeBron.
Absolutely.
I don't know that there's a better
Klay don't want to dribble, and LeBron will handle all that.
Yeah, absolutely right. Klay doesn't need the ball in his hands. He'll take 5 dribbles a game and score 30 points. I can't believe the Warriors would risk, when they know they could lose Kevin Durant, would risk alienating Klay Thompson. What, is saving the money for Draymond?
Right.
What Steph's already got his contract, so I would be shocked if Klay actually comes available. If he does, yeah, he'll be the Lakers' target.
All right, let's take a break. A lot to chew on there. Coming up, back to football. Can Jared Goff keep pace with Tom Brady? That is ahead on First Things First.
Hey, guys, it's Nick Wright, and I want to tell you about Indochino, a new way for men to upgrade their wardrobe without breaking the bank. Indochino was founded on the belief that you don't need to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe by taking the premium made-to-measure experience direct to the consumer. They've created a superior alternative to off-the-rack clothing at ready-to-wear prices. Indochino allows customers to step into the shoes of a designer to create custom suits, shirts, chinos, blazers, and overcoats. They select from hundreds of fabrics and endless options, including lapels, pockets, buttons, linings, and monograms. Indochino couldn't make it any easier to start looking good. Just follow these easy steps. Visit a stylist at our showroom and have them take your measurements personally, or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with your choices, and then relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in the next couple of weeks. My listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. That's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Now, back to the show.
Check out world featherweight champion Leo the Earthquake Santa Cruz put his belt on the line against Rafael Big Bang Rivera live February 16th on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral. So LeBron James hasn't played since December 25th, but it seems like a return is near. He practiced with the Lakers on Sunday, was seen getting up some shots yesterday. Seems he's antsy to return. Seems he's still staying in shape, leaning off the carbs. Took to the gram, said, almost that time again. I've missed you so damn much. Hashtag been a caged angry lion. Hashtag strive for greatness. Hashtag I'm not wearing a shirt, but you already knew that.
So obviously the longest stretch of missed games in LeBron's career. First real injury of his career. I expect we'll see him again Thursday. He's not going to play tonight. I expect we will see him in the game after their game tonight. That would be my guess.
Yeah,
a little informed speculation.
Yeah, I'm just getting on the gram a little bit. I know some other people. LeBron's been very prominent on there as far as one of the most popular athletes. Jenna will bear her abs on the gram. Yeah. I'm not that familiar with the gram yet to be doing that. But if you got enough confidence, do your thing, LeBron. Do your thing, Jenna.
Find Chris Carter on the gram. Jenna Wolf, you probably already found on the gram. She's Instagram superstar.
You just joined recently.
Yeah, I'm getting it right. I just send takes. I don't even do pictures. I just take screenshots of takes.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. Zion Williamson had another great night in a Duke win over Notre Dame. Scored 26 points, grabbed 9 boards on just 12 shots. Nick, what else can you say about Zion?
I mean, he's the most surefire number one overall pick since Anthony Davis. We were talking about him when he was in high school. And if you remember, see, after about 3 weeks of showing Zion highlights, I said, if this kid's the number three recruit in his class, this must be the greatest recruiting class in the history of sports. Turns out he should have been the number one kid in his class, and he should be the number one pick of the draft. He is an unstoppable force in college basketball on both ends.
Yeah, and there were some people saying that Zion shouldn't play college. He should protect. You know how much better he's gotten in the last 30 days? Like, that's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. You get better doing something by playing either or doing, participating in it. So he's going to be so much better after the NCAA tournament and ready to be that
number
one pick.
And he's not a college running back where you can make the argument, you know what, wear and tear, significant injury. Like, no, he's a basketball player. Basketball players play basketball year-round. That's silly.
To the NBA now, Lonzo Ball has been linked to Anthony Davis trade rumors. But according to reports, Lonzo's camp would prefer he not stay with the Pelicans if traded there. Nick, what's your reaction to this preemptive request by Lonzo Ball?
Man, Big Baller Brand does stuff differently. Lonzo's going to unprecedented territory of requesting a trade from a team he's not yet on. I like this move. Now, I don't think the Pelicans going to listen to him. I don't think the Lakers give a damn what he wants. But Lonzo's saying, hey, this future team I'm not yet on, I don't want to be there. I don't know why he thinks he's got this type of leverage, but go ahead, Lonzo. See, do you, man.
Right, let me tell you, there's other teams you can go to, and he might end up somewhere. But let me tell you, that free throw line is still 15 feet. You need to figure out how to shoot from there instead of trying to figure out what's going to be your next team. There's some things you can work on as far as your game is concerned, because no matter where you land, the free throw line is going to be 15 feet.
And if you're just worried about sitting behind Drew Holiday, if the Pelicans trade Anthony Davis, Drew Holiday might be on his way out as well. Like, you could be the starting point guard in short order. Just chill, Big Baller Brand.
All right, finally, many have speculated this could be Rob Gronkowski's last game, especially since he talked about retiring last year. When Gronk was asked about this, he said retirement is one of the things on his mind. It's one of the last things on his mind. See, do you think the Super Bowl could be Gronk's last game?
Oh, absolutely. You can only play football that way for so long. And people would like to present this as, oh, man, Gronk has a bunch of options. Okay, we got Tom Brady, 41, still trying to play. Yesterday said, hey, man, I'm going to play till I'm 45. I'm going to try to. And the reason why he can, because he can play at a high level. Gronk can't function at a high level playing that way, running people over. He struggled this year during the regular season like we hadn't seen. Now, in the playoff, as a end-of-the-line blocker, as a motion blocker, he has been dominant. As a pass receiver, after that bye week, only playing those two games in 3 weeks, after another bye week, he'll look good in the Super Bowl. They will get him in some situations. He will look good. It won't look like, man, this is this guy's last game, but it's inevitable. When you keep running into people and you come into the NFL with a bad back, all the injuries he's had, and the thing that's going to cause him besides that, he can't do like Belichick. He can't do like Brady's done with Belichick. He can't deal with Belichick every day. And he's not going to say it, but that's one of the reasons why he's going to be walking away from the game, is because that intensity every single day, Rob Gronkowski, he can't do that for 10 years.
And he can't guarantee that Belichick won't trade him like Brady is now guaranteed.
He almost traded him this
offseason. Almost traded him this offseason. Once you start true, I would imagine this was true for you. Once you started really considering retirement, not just the moment after a season ended being angry and upset, but into the offseason wondering if I'm coming back, the clock starts ticking on your expiration date as a player.
And it really starts to tick because you start entertaining different conversations.
Sure.
All the things that I had done as far as broadcasting, then I started having meetings with the executives that were on a different level. So even my mindset when I went back into my environment of training for the season, I had other things in my mind that polluted it, that it's impossible to be at your best when you got one foot in one career and another foot potentially in another career.
And when we talk about one of the most intoxicating things for an athlete is the roar of the crowd, with so much, I think, informed speculation surrounding Gronk and going into professional wrestling, man, they got crowds there too. Like, the roar of the crowd would be there. Like, the Royal Rumble was this weekend. You got 50,000 people standing and cheering. And so, like, Gronk also has the ability, because he is one of the few real brands in the NFL, to make legitimate money. Not NFL money, but legitimate money in his first few years out of the league. And I just don't know how much fun the season is for him at this point, when his body hurts the way it does. And when you're not the superstar player you once were. I imagine that's a little, when you used to be 15 touchdowns, and now you're 5 touchdowns, I imagine that's a little tough. Like, and so he almost retired last offseason. I'm not saying Gronk, this is definitely his last game, but I think it's 60-40 odds in favor that this will be his last football game, especially if they win.
What do the Patriots need most from Rob Gronkowski this Sunday? Is it going to be his blocking?
Man, they've been special. Their offensive line, they got 90 dropbacks. They got 3 pressures, no sacks. I mean, to say that's not important, but I just think, just like Kansas City, Nick and I talked about the game last week leading up to the game, and he will be needed there. But in the end of the game, he is so valuable because there's no matchup. They don't have a linebacker that can guard him. They don't have one of their safeties that can guard him. So he's so valuable. That's the reason why he's an all-pro. The reason why Kelce just passed him as the best tight end is because he's so good at both. He can do both at such a high level. If I had to take away one in this game, I would just say his receiving ability, because they're going to throw the ball to the running back and to Edelman. His ability to be able to stabilize that offensive line and block in the run game, I believe, is the number one priority.
They don't have anyone else that can do his job in the blocking game.
No.
But they do have people that can do his job in the receiving game. But here is to C's point late in the game. Through the first 7 quarters of this postseason, and through basically the entirety of those 7 quarters, the Pats were up by 2 scores. Once you're midway through the first quarter against the Chargers, through the end of the game, and then the first 3 quarters against the Chiefs, Gronk had 4 catches for 53 yards total in those first 7 quarters. In that fourth quarter in OT against the Chiefs, when the game got close, he had 3 catches for 51 yards. They still have that in case of emergency break glass on Gronk, and they will use it. I would imagine they will use him both ways in this Super Bowl, and he'll want to be. Particularly if he's thinking, even if he's saying it's the last thing on my mind, he knows this could be his last football game. He's going to want to go out making an impact.
All right, let's move on now to Anthony Davis. Boston has been long rumored to be a potential landing spot for AD, but according to reports, the Celtics are not a top priority for the Brow. In addition, there's a growing belief that Kyrie Irving will not sign a long-term deal with the Celtics. Not a great day to be Danny Ainge. Nick, what do you make of the Celtics situation? Here we go.
I mean, I hate to say I told you so. But
well, I'll say it for him. My buddy, he told us. He told us a long time ago when Kyrie, when he originally made the trade demands, he told us the inside story behind LeBron. It wasn't LeBron's fault. LeBron was emphatic. Man, hey, he'll get over
it. Bring him back and we'll figure it out.
Man, we'll work this out. Do not trade Kyrie. And in Kyrie's trade demands, he didn't demand going to Boston. Nick had gotten the intel, his couple sources. He's building his resume. He came in with like a third of a source. Now he's got like a combined
three. He's got 3. One.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Is one. So he was on this saying Kyrie would not be in Boston permanently.
And now, listen, Kyrie came out before the season and said, I want to be here long term. And I believed Kyrie in that moment, that he believed that. And I sent out a tweet, congrats to the Celtics on their engagement. I hope the wedding happens. And now things change. And Kyrie's learning, man, life as the leader amongst young guys is not exactly what I thought it was going to be. He don't have another star with him. Gordon Hayward is not the player he once was. Gordon Hayward right now is, maybe it changes next year. Right now, that's just a bad contract. He's 10 points a game, 20 minutes, making 20 plus million. That's a problem. And Kyrie could have a bit of a wandering eye. And Kyrie could wonder, like, Brad Stevens is a great coach, but is he the greatest coach for me? The Celtics will say, oh, no, we're fully confident, fully confident. Okay. All right, let's see. Let's see if Kyrie is there long term. As far as Anthony Davis goes, you didn't take any reporting to know this. Anthony Davis allowed Rich Paul to release this trade demand knowing that the Celtics were prohibited from trading for him.
Right.
If he wanted to go to Boston, he would have waited to make this trade demand to the offseason when Boston could get in the game. So both of these things, like, it, to me, this one is obvious that Anthony Davis is telling the world, no, I don't want to go to Boston. If I wanted to go to Boston, he'd wait till this summer. Boston would include Tatum, and they'd get him.
Or he could have done it even sooner than that. He could have done it after the trade deadline, told the Pelicans, I'm not going to sign an extension.
Absolutely.
But there's a problem because the contract, the language with the Rose rule, where you can't have Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving on the team at the same time with these two existing contracts.
Right, until July 1st, until Kyrie gets a new deal.
And they can make a deal even after the regular season and just announce it on July the 1st. But they have problems. And you mentioned some of the things. The timing for which they announced it with 10 days to go. They know this is the window for the Lakers, and they know that Danny Ainge, even though they have more assets, even though they have better picks coming, that Sacramento pick, the pick coming from
the Grizzlies pick.
The Grizzlies pick. Like,
and they got a Clippers pick.
I mean, those are prime picks, especially that Grizzly pick. That could be the number one pick.
So here's the thing about those picks, is that Grizzlies pick might one day be the number one pick, but people need to know how these picks work. The Celtics have their own pick this year. That's guaranteed. They also have the Kings pick. That's guaranteed theirs as long as it's not the number one pick of the draft, and it won't be. Kings are too good. They're not going to win the lottery. So they got those two picks. But that Grizzlies pick is top eight protected. Grizzlies are going to be one of the five worst teams in the league when it's all said and done, especially when they sell off their roster. The Clippers pick is lottery protected. Clippers are holding on for dear life not to fall into the lottery. They're about to. They lost again last night. The Lakers will jump them. So this, the Celtics are going to have four picks. No, they're going to have two picks. That's first of all. Second of all, Danny Ainge has made it clear to people within that organization, from what I have been told, that if Anthony Davis is not committed to signing an extension, Jason Tatum is not on the board. Okay, so if Jason Tatum's not on the board, what are these assets? It's Jaylen Brown, it's Terry Rozier, it's Marcus Smart, and it's these picks.
So, man, they looked a lot better on paper. Like, the last year and a half, we've been talking about all these picks and what they would be. Mm-hmm. And now when you start to boil them down, the ones that are protected and the ones aren't protected, not as sexy.
And that Grizzlies pick, I just want people to understand, it's top eight protected this year, then top six, then unprotected. That is a hell of an asset, a potentially unprotected Grizzlies pick in 2021. New Orleans can't wait for that. New Orleans got a lease coming up at the Smoothie King Center in 2022. That team could leave. They cannot sell their fans on, don't worry, We've got Jaylen Brown and a kid who's 15 right now coming. They need players today. Now, the Celtics can make the best offer if they include Jason Tatum. He's the best blue chipper available.
But Danny Ainge isn't going to.
Not unless Anthony Davis says, I want to sign an extension there. And if Anthony Davis wanted to sign an extension there, he wouldn't have demanded the trade now.
Hold on. Let's just take a step back and simplify for a second. If you look at this almost like a chess match, it looks like if you move around all the moving pieces before and after the trade deadline and whatnot, it could be LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and it looks like Kyrie Irving in a Los Angeles Lakers uniform by the start of next season.
That absolutely, to me, that is far more likely than Kyrie and Anthony Davis in Celtics jerseys at the start of next season.
Yes.
And that's been the Celtics white whale the whole time. One of their people said it was the Moby Dick to me yesterday for them. Anthony Davis for all these years. To pair him with his buddy Kyrie Irving, I don't think that's going to happen. And I think I would be shocked if Anthony Davis is a Celtic, and it's looking more and more like Kyrie Irving might not be a Celtic.
And Anthony Davis has been very strategic, even as far as releasing this information. He talked to his teammates first before they were releasing the information to the team. That was the right way to do things. And he hadn't released the information. Rich Paul hadn't released the information yet. But Anthony Davis does not want to sign an extension with Boston. That's why they did the timing of the 10 days. He's just not going to say it. Now, he's done all the right things. He doesn't want that out there, but eventually it will be obvious.
I'm going to add something to that. I think it's more specific than that. I've been told it's a little more specific than that. Anthony Davis, they don't want to say it because they think it's going to muddy the waters. It might really anger New Orleans, and it could hurt their leverage. But Anthony Davis is the next domino for him, if he wants to play it, is having Rich Paul send out a press release that says, Anthony Davis will only sign an extension with the Los Angeles Lakers. And let everyone know the Knicks, the Raptors, the Nuggets might want to get involved. the Celtics, obviously, it would be a rental. They don't want to do that because that would cool the market for the Pelicans. And as we've seen, the last four guys to say, I want to be traded and trade me to a specific place, Kawhi, Kyrie, Butler, Paul George, they all got traded. None of them to that specific place. So they don't want to play that card yet. Mm-hmm. But that card could be coming.
If there were only a couple of storylines in the NBA,
oh my goodness,
so much more fun. Coming up, more on Anthony Davis, and if he's heading to the Lakers, that's ahead on First Things First. Coming up next, Deshaun Watson joins us here on First Things First. A lot to ask him about the season, the Super Bowl ahead. Talk to him in a little bit. But back to the trade rumor shaking up the NBA. 10 days before the deadline, and Anthony Davis has requested a trade from the Pelicans. Keep in mind, the team is under no obligation to make a move now, as Davis isn't a free agent until 2020. But according to reports, both the Lakers and the Knicks are preparing offers for the star big man. And clearly, whoever lands him will obviously look to lock him up long term. Nick, which team do you think would be a better situation for Anthony Davis, the Knicks or the Lakers?
I think, well, to me, the obvious answer is the Lakers as presently constituted. Because they've got LeBron, they've got, you know, they will be able to attract free agents. Now, the Knicks, that math could change. Let's see if the Pelicans wait till the summer. Guess what happens before the summer? A couple things. One is that draft lottery happens. The Knicks are going to have a 16% chance of getting Zion Williamson. 16% chance, new draft odds this year. Mm-hmm. Worst four records all get the same, or worst three records all get the same odds. Knicks going to be one of those worst records. And so a 16% chance of the number one overall pick and getting Zion. Also, might find out Kevin Durant's going there. Then all of a sudden, you have a real discussion about which team is in the best position, given the strength of the Eastern Conference, given Kevin Durant's age, given how those two seven-foot super freaks would match up playing alongside each other. All that changes the math, but as presently constituted, it's the Lakers, and it's not, to me, even close.
Well, you talked about Durant being one of the options as far as being here in New York. And for people who... because that's been out there.
Yeah.
He's got business partners associated there with the Knicks. This is a market potentially he would want to visit with free agency. What if they don't get Kevin Durant? What are other options might the Knicks have to be able to pair with AD?
So the problem for me is if they don't, let's assume they don't get Durant, and there's an 84% chance they don't get Zion. So let's assume they don't get Zion Williamson as well, right? Because the odds are they won't if you only have a 16% chance. Then what type of trade can the Knicks make that is attractive to the Pelicans that doesn't leave the Knicks as the Pelicans in New York City? Meaning a team with Anthony Davis and nothing. Like, the Knicks could include Kristaps, okay, but then what do they have left? If they don't have Kevin Durant, they get the second or third pick of the draft. Like, why would Anthony Davis want to go from New Orleans to New York to once again be in a rebuild? Now, could the Knicks...
He could be there with Kyrie.
If they add another free agent. See, so there's the other interesting piece. Is Anthony Davis making this request because he wants to go to the Lakers, or is he making this request because he wants to go to the Lakers or anywhere they can have another star with him? Because he listened to what Kevin Garnett told him, which is, hey, man, the whole thing changed when I went to Boston and won that ring. That it's about the way you're going to be looked at is what you were able to do in big moments. Because Kevin Garnett was in a very similar situation, a generational talent toiling in obscurity. They would get to the playoffs. They'd get knocked out. They could never build a team around him except for that one year when they made the Western Conference Finals in Minnesota. Here's a trade that would work, just so people know. Kevin Knox, Frankie Ntilikina, Tim Hardaway Jr., and your lottery pick for Anthony Davis. That trade works, and you
is
keep Kristaps.
Zion?
Well, I don't think that, so that's the thing is, you would the Knicks even offer up Zion Williamson? I wouldn't. I wouldn't offer up Zion, just for the record. Zion's the, I love Anthony Davis. I would, if I'm the Knicks, and I have the option to get him in this city, I don't, but if I get the second pick and it's R.J. Barrett, the third pick and it's our kid Ja Morant, like, I would offer up those guys. If they win the lottery, I don't know that any team's going to offer up that pick.
I would offer it up. If I'm Scott Perry, I know Scott Perry well. I do believe that Scott Perry does have significant relationships in basketball that are going to attract someone to the Knicks. The Knicks haven't been that attractive for a long, long time. He does have intel. He does have a relationship with Kevin Durant. He was part of the management team in Seattle when Kevin Durant got drafted.
Yep.
So those first couple years, Scott Perry was one of the people who had a relationship with Kevin Durant there and helped do things for him. So I think Kevin Durant feels very, very comfortable. If you have Kristaps still available on the franchise, you also have Kyrie behind the scenes. He is a Jersey kid. He would like to play in New York City in the Garden. So I just believe with the new hierarchy that they have for the Knicks, they have a couple things in place that make the Knicks far more attractive than they have been.
How is it not, explain this to me, how is it not a conflict of interest to have, you know, obviously LeBron James would love the Brow to come to L.A. How is it not a conflict of interest to have Clutch representing both of them and him saying, you know what, I think I'm going to go to the Knicks
instead? I'm really glad you asked that. Because this is going to become, as we find different angles to talk about the Anthony Davis story, a discussion point, which is the influence of Rich Paul in Clutch Sports.
Yeah.
I want people to understand this. This is how business has been done in the NBA forever. David Falk helped run the NBA when he was repping Michael Jordan, had that much influence. Dan Fagan. Once upon a time, Dan Fagan was repping Dwight Howard and Chandler Parsons. The Rockets wanted Dwight Howard. Dan Fagan said, I will steer him to you or away from you based on will you let Chandler Parsons out of his contract next year?
Major League Baseball.
That's terrible.
Scott Burrows.
It's just how it's done.
It's normal business.
It's normal. And by the way, the Rockets and Chandler and Dwight will all deny that that happened. It definitely happened. So here's the reason I bring it up. It wasn't no issue for anybody till all of a sudden it's Rich Paul and LeBron. Like, we've always had agents as puppet masters in the league, and people just accepted it. Rich Paul and Clutch Sports, they became an agency in a little bit of a different way. They're run a little bit of a different way, and people don't like the influence that group, that age, that demographic, how they came up is having encroaching on what had been other people's turf. But this is how business is done in the NBA and has been for as long as I've been alive.
All right, coming up, Deshaun Watson joins the show. That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. You know, it's a pretty good time to be Deshaun Watson. In his second season as an NFL starter, the Texans quarterback led his team to an AFC South title. He also made the Pro Bowl after throwing 26 touchdowns. Deshaun Watson is in Atlanta this week, probably for the Super Bowl. Obviously for the Super Bowl. He joins us now. Good morning, Deshaun. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, so let's start right off the bat. You end your first season, has to cut short with the ACL injury. Your second season, your first full season, you make it to the Pro Bowl. How did it feel to be able to do that?
Oh, man, it felt great. Thankful that, Phillip and Tom didn't have to go, so I can be able to go to my first one. But, it was an awesome experience. I had a great time down in Orlando with all the guys, and it was pretty cool. I enjoyed it.
Deshaun, I was so impressed watching you this year, particularly in the second half of the year. You were electric the moment you stepped on the field your rookie season. The only knock was you turned the ball over a lot. You were able to overcome it. Early in this year, you turned the ball over a lot. We're still able to overcome it. But the last, 8 to 10 games of the year, you cut that out of your game almost entirely. How were you able to so quickly fix what was the one weakness in your game at that point?
Really just the mentality I was going into a game. You know, when I was going into the game, especially, you know, my rookie year, the first half of the year, I was still kind of, you know, trusting my ability and just kind of trying to, you know, make the big plays instead of letting the big plays happen. So, you know, after the bye week when I changed my game and I was just taking what the defense was giving me, it was giving us a better chance to win those games and being able to, you know, put more points on the board.
Deshaun, Chris Carter here. Great to talk to you again. Man, you got hit an awful lot last season, 62 sacks. What are you and Bill O'Brien in discussing moving forward? Because you talked about areas to improve in. How are they going to protect you better moving forward? And what if you learned in your first couple seasons that might be able to bring that number down in the future?
Being able to get the ball out a little bit quicker. And then kind of communicating with the O-line, you know, making sure we're on the same page, kind of understanding what the defense is doing pre-snap so I can know where to get the ball out whenever, you know, pressure do come or, you know, an O-lineman miss a block or something like that and try to get the ball to the receivers, you know, quick as possible. You know, we watch Tom Brady all the time and, you know, he don't really get set too much because he already know where he's going with the ball, so the ball's out. So, you know, just taking my game to another level with the knowledge and helping the whole offense out, you know, that way.
Deshaun, you had that great stretch during the season where we kept coming in here on Monday talking about your win and a win and a win and a win, and it was week after week. Then you won the AFC South. It was a good time for you guys, but what has to happen for your team to take the next step moving forward now?
You know, of course, health. You got to have that health, but also just kind of, you know, once we get to that opportunity in the playoffs again, we got to really, you know, take it, you know, to another level. As far as the training, preparation, everything, we just got to take it to another level because it's a whole new season. And, you know, everyone is for their own selves. So once we get an opportunity into that, you know, the playoff, you know, time, we just got to make sure that, you know, we take another step and, you know, train a little bit harder.
You have one of the opportunities as a young quarterback to throw to one of my favorite receivers in the league. And not only just because right. of his hand size, his catch radius, but I just believe our careers had a lot of things in similar. Early in his career, played with a lot of different quarterbacks, really didn't get a lot of notoriety. Now he gets the superstar. You tell me in America why DeAndre Hopkins is the best wide receiver in the NFL.
I mean, the things he do, the knowledge of the game, I mean, the catches he make is it crazy. It's very, very crazy. It doesn't surprise me because he do it all the time in practice. He do it all the time when we're training in the offseason. So it's kind of normal to him and normal to me. But, I mean, he loves the hard catches. For some reason, the easy catches, he don't really, you know, catch too well. But if it's, you know, all over the place, then he's going to, you know, snag it. So, I mean, he's doing great things, and I feel like he can take his game to another level. He know that, too.
The Texans, I think most people believe, have three superstars. We're talking to one of them. We just talked about one of them. Now let's go to the other side of the ball, J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt had established himself as a superstar, I think, right around the time you got to Clemson. And then, at least for my purposes, I was worried that we would never see that version of J.J. Watt again after a couple seasons lost to injury. How impressed were you with his ability to get back to being the old J.J. Watt this year? And can you tell us something we might not know about him, about what he puts into his day to be the player that he is?
I mean, I've watched JJ. You know, we both were hurt last year, and so I had a whole offseason to be able to watch him train and get back, you know, to his peak where he was this year. And, I mean, just the things he do. I mean, it's full 4 days from eating, you know, a certain way, working out in a certain way, getting massages, treatment, you know, with the trainer, physical therapist, everything. The way he, you know, carry himself, watch film. And, I mean, he was just determined to make sure that, you know, regardless of what people are saying, that they'll never see him on the feel again and never be where he was before. He was determined to prove people wrong, and that's what he did. And I mean, it's spectacular. It gave me a lot of motivation to be able to do the same thing, you know, as I, you know, progress in my career.
Speaking of proving people wrong, we've been talking all season and now all week about Tom Brady. You were 6 years old, Deshaun, when Tom Brady won his first Super Bowl. All those things you say that J.J. Watt put into his game, we hear so much about how much Tom Brady puts into his body and his preparation, right. The stuff he eats, the way he trains. How surprised are you that he's still playing at this high of a level at this point in his career?
I'm not surprised at all. You know, Coach O'Brien coached him for a couple years, and so we have a lot of guys that is playing on our team, you know, play at the Patriots, or a lot of coaches that play with Tom Brady. And the things that they tell me, you know, especially Wes Welker, you know, I meet with Wes Welker every week, and the things we talk about with Tom, you know, the way he carries himself, the way he put things in his body, the way he prepare mentally is spectacular. So I'm trying to take every little nugget that they, you know, seen Tom do, you know, and apply to my game and my career and try to, you know, find some type of formula where I can be able to do the same thing, you know, and hopefully I can play till I'm 40, you know, God willing. But, you know, every little thing that he's doing, I'm trying to, you know, put in my game also.
Deshaun, you're in a very unique time in NFL history. Not only do we have the GOAT and Tom Brady playing at the Super Bowl level, we have Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, and a number of others, Ben Roethlisberger, guys playing at a high level. But also, We have a group of young quarterbacks under 25 that I would believe will have the same type of career. You're giving advice to Jared Goff going to Super Bowl 53. You faced this defense and the Pats twice. What advice are you giving him that he's able to go out there and dictate this win for the Rams to pull off the upset?
I think really two or three things is, you know, protect the ball. When you're in the red zone, score points. Don't kick field goals, score points. And really the third thing, just, you know, play free, play confident, you know, because they're going to try to take you out of the game early, try to confuse you. But if you just stick to your P's and Q's and do everything that you know, prep for all week, you'll be just fine. But protecting the ball, scoring touchdowns, have to score touchdowns, and then just, you know, being who you are.
All right, let's talk about the Patriots a little bit. You played them your rookie season. You led the Texans to what looked like a great win. I think that game was in Gillette, if I'm remembering correctly. And then Tom Brady drove down the field, as he so often does. I'm not sure if that was actually a catch at the front of the end zone by Brandon Cooks, but the referees missed it, and you guys end up losing. But your guys' offense was able to move the ball. You played them the first game of this year is a different story. What are the types of things we hear all the time, and we saw what they did to Pat Mahomes in the first half last week, that the Patriots try to confuse you, that they don't let you know defensively what type of coverage you're going to see. What are the types of things they do differently from a front and coverage perspective or from a pre-snap cover perspective that can be difficult on the quarterback of the opposing team?
Honestly, I think, you know, especially for me and probably even Pat also, you know, you watch the first games that me and Patrick Mahomes played against the Patriots. You know, they were kind of, I wouldn't say basic, but you can tell what they were doing. So you can kind of, you know, just, you know, pick where you want to go with the ball. But the second time, you know, the defensive line contain you, try to keep you in the pocket. They disguise a little bit longer and the coverage is a little bit more tighter. And, you know, they don't do the same thing that they did in the previous game. So it makes the game a lot more harder. And, you know, both games, like we, you know, with Patrick, you know, started off, you know, slow. And then the second half, he caught fire. Same with ours. You know, we lost by 7, you know, in the second half. We kind of, you know, caught fire with the run game and, you know, the quick pass game and, you know, came down to a Hail Mary. So, I mean, they do a good job of switching up what they do. It's never the same. And I mean, they're very, very disciplined.
Deshaun, enough with pro football. Let's get a little bit, because I know, man, you are proud of your Clemson Tigers. Man, you brag how Dabo Sweeney went to Georgia, be able to take you all these top recruits from all these other hotbeds and bring them to Clemson. Explain what Clemson's doing right now as far as football, and give us a little insight on who Dabo is and your personal relationship, that connective tissue that both of you have there with the Clemson Tiger allegiance growing strong now in college football.
I mean, they're up there with Alabama. You know, year in, year out, they're going to have the best athletes. They're going to have the great people. They're going to have a coaching staff that's going to, you know, make sure that their players are ready to go. You know, it's pretty much a dynasty now. And, you know, we don't, once I got to Clemson, you know, when I was a freshman, it was more just trying to win the ACC. But now it's, you know, is it either national championship or it was a, you know, terrible year. And, you know, Coach Sweeney is a guy where he relates to all the players. He relates to the players' parents, the families. And the thing that he give off is he want the good in all the players. He want the players to be able to be good citizens, good students, and then good football players. You know, football don't really come first once you go to Clemson. It comes, like, third on the back end. So, you know, being a good student, getting a degree, and then being a good citizen off the field, that's what he care about. So a lot of people relate to that.
Deshaun, obviously Clemson had a lot of great players before you got there and had some success. And now Dabo, they are one of the two most prominent programs in college football, and Dabo Sweeney is the face of that program. But how much pride do you take personally that when people look at Clemson football now, it started with two unbelievable games by you? I know there's other guys. I know it was a team effort. But when you look at what they've done since you left, how much pride do you take in what you were able to do in those two national championship games to put them in that position?
I take a lot of pride in it. That's one reason why I went to Clemson, is because back when, you know, they were recruiting me my sophomore year in high school, you know, Coach Sweeney said, hey, you're going to be the quarterback to change this whole program. You're going to make sure that you're going to set the tone and make us a dynasty. And that's what I fell in love with. You know, he was honest with me, and that's what I wanted in myself. And so that's the reason why I went to Clemson. And those opportunities came up, those two national championships, and I took advantage of it. And now, you know, they just, you know, continue to go to the playoffs and have opportunities opportunity to win it. So I take a lot of pride in that, and you know, I'm very proud that, you know, I was able to do that. And you know, it's Coach Sweeney. I really respect him and appreciate him, because everything he told me in the recruiting process, it came true, and you know, I really love it.
All right, Deshaun, before we let you go, tell us a little bit about your partnership with Old Spice.
Yeah, I'm a partner with Old Spice, the all-new fresher collection. You know, women, you know, have a lot of, you know, body wash products. So, you know, Old Spice is giving men, you know, the opportunity to have a lot more body products, and it's the new all-new fresher collection.
Deshaun, thank you so much for joining us. Again, congratulations on staying healthy this year. A great season for the Texans, and again, the time with us today. Enjoy the week.
I will. Thank y'all. I appreciate y'all.
All right, moving on. Zion Williamson had another great night in a Duke win over Notre Dame last night. Scored 26 points, grabbed 9 rebounds on only 12 shots. Nick, how often do I ask you this? How good is Zion?
All right, I'll put him in the Hall of Fame. We start carving the bust right now. Don't care he ain't played in the NBA yet. This kid is the most can't-miss number one pick since the guy who's been in the news all week, Anthony Davis. Like, he went into the year, he was third or fourth on draft boards. He was the third recruit. I watched this kid in high school. Never seen an athlete like him. I didn't know he was such a great defensive player from those high school highlights. We now see that. Only thing he doesn't have is a reliable jump shot, but it's still better than some of the jump shots we see of NBA superstars who can't shoot. So he's spectacular.
And, man. Nick, we heard some comments that upset us earlier in the season. People were talking about, oh, he's going to be the number one pick. Stop playing college basketball. It's amazing how much better he's gotten in the last month, how much better he's going to get after going through the ACC tournament and NCAA tournament. Man, he is a remarkable talent that is only getting better. Learn how to shoot, Zion, though.
Right, but the idea that basketball players play basketball.
Yes.
This isn't like when people encourage a college running back to sit out the year, it's not like we got a lot of NFL running backs. What do you do in the offseason? I find tackle football games to play in, and people hit me.
What about Jadeveon Clowney? They told him, oh, you should leave college. And, well, it's still a lot he can learn about football.
Sure, but at least with football, there's the real injury risk. Zion, keep playing. Even if he gets hurt, he's the number one pick.
More now on Anthony Davis. So Boston has long been rumored to be a potential landing spot for AD, but according to reports, the Celtics are not a top priority for the Brow. In addition, there is a growing belief that Kyrie Irving will not sign a long-term deal with the Celtics. All right, CC, what do you make of this? What do you make of the Celtics situation?
On paper, and people have talked about it for the last year and a half, 2 years, as far as Danny Ainge, they've always wanted to be involved in the conversation if Anthony Davis ever decided to leave the New Orleans Pelicans. So now we're to that moment. But with this announcement, there's a few things that people must know. As attractive as Boston thought they might be, they're not as attracted based on Anthony Davis, what he wants to do long term, and the timing of his announcement. He did this strategic with Clutch Sports. They announced it 10 days before the trade deadline. They know that the Celtics can't participate with their best offer, given that him and Kyrie Irving have that
player extension.
Yeah, they have that both in their contract where they can't be on the roster until past this summer together. So he knew that. Clutch Sports knew that. And if Anthony Davis, if he wanted to be in Boston, he wouldn't have declared, I wouldn't sign an extension till after the trade deadline at the beginning of the summer.
Right. So we'll talk about the Kyrie stuff in a moment. But Anthony Davis made it very clear. We didn't need to report anything. I'm glad it's being officially reported, but it was the moment that he made the announcement, when he did, that was a signal, Boston, I'm not interested in you. Because it's not like it's a shock to Rich Paul and Anthony Davis that Boston cannot make a trade offer unless they're going to include Kyrie Irving, which the only reason Anthony Davis would want to stay in Boston would be if Kyrie's there.
And I think they're strategic in the timing of doing it, not only with the 10-day window and what they want to do moving forward. They know Boston can't participate like with their best offer. And I believe that Anthony Davis, behind the scenes, has talked to Kyrie Irving. He has more intel because they have a relationship. But Man, this is a tough thing for Boston, being waiting all this time, talking about Anthony Davis. Like, you would think that Boston would be prime. They have better assets than Los Angeles. But when you look at it on paper, Nick,
the assets different. Aren't quite what we think they are. So let's just assume that Anthony Davis doesn't get traded before the deadline. And then Boston does get back in it. Because once Kyrie is on a new contract, that then he can be on the same team as Anthony Davis. If Anthony Davis is not going to sign an extension with the Celtics, won't commit to that, will Danny Ainge include Jason Tatum? All reports I've heard are no. If he won't include Jason Tatum, then what are these assets? Jaylen Brown's your best player asset. Then it's Terry Rozier. Then it's Marcus Smart. Because Gordon Hayward is no longer an asset. His contract is actually a net negative. 10 points in 20 minutes a game, making $20-plus million. All right, let's talk about the picks. They have their own pick. That's fine. That'll be in the mid to late 20s. The Kings pick, which is not as good as people thought it was going to be because the Kings are better, but that'll be a lottery pick. Mm-hmm. The Grizzlies pick, that's top eight protected. That probably does not convey this year. The Clippers pick is lottery protected the next 2 years, and then it becomes second rounders. So all these picks... That Grizzlies pick might be an awesome pick in 2 or 3 years when it finally conveys. Mm-hmm. Jason Tatum might not be even involved in the offer. So now all of a sudden, can the Celtics make a better offer? Will they make a better offer than the Lakers? And then there's the Kyrie part of it, which is Kyrie sat on that, stood up in front of everybody, said, I want to be a Celtic. I want to sign an extension here. Things can change. And so it's tumultuous times for the Celtics because I think we are in a place where it is more likely that right now that Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving are on the same team together next year with the Lakers than that they're on the same team together next year with the Celtics. And that would mean everything the Celtics have been building towards was for naught.
And I don't think Anthony Davis and Clutch Sports, because it doesn't benefit them and or the New Orleans Pelicans, for them to say right now they're not going to sign with Boston. I believe they're going to play this out strategically the way they've played out the announcement 10 days before, because it's not in the Pelicans' best interest to close the door on Boston as a potential landing spot for Anthony Davis.
And I just think if they do that, it could anger the Pelicans to an extent where they're like, you know what, we'll send you anywhere but the Lakers. So I don't think he wants to, because it will hurt the Pelicans' leverage if Anthony Davis publicly says, I'll only re-sign with the Lakers.
Right, because the other rumor is that that's the only place he would sign an extension.
And I think that's probably true, but they're not publicly saying that.
All right, let's get back to football now. Less than a week away from Super Bowl 53. Tom Brady making his 9th trip to the Super Bowl, his 3rd straight at age 41. Jared Goff, first trip at age 24. This is Brady's 19th season in the NFL. For Goff, it's just his 3rd. So Brady was asked if he had any advice for the much younger Goff. Take a listen.
What sort of advice would you give this guy as he gets ready to take on the big bad Patriots?
I'm not giving him any advice. Crazy. They got a great team. I got to go against that guy all night, so that's what I'm concerned about. And I know how great of a player he is. They got a great defense, best D-line in the league, a couple of the best interceptors probably ever playing this game. So I got my work cut out for me.
All right, CeCe, how much of this game is going to come down to how Jared Goff plays?
Well, I'm going to look at the last 2 Super Bowls as evidence. No need to go beyond that as far as Tom Brady and the Patriots, their other 7 Super Bowls. We're always going to have this question you get in a game like this going against a guy like Tom Brady. Matty Ice coming off an MVP season, led Atlanta Falcons a couple seasons ago to the Super Bowl. We had the same question. Can Matty Ice match Tom Brady? Did he match it? Absolutely. One of the greatest games we've ever seen. Great comeback by the Patriots to be able to get the win. Last week going against the backup, and last year going against the backup and Nick Foles. Can he battle Tom Brady? Man, throw for throw. Tom Brady threw for 500. Nick throws threw for 340.
370.
And right there, yes. So is it possible? There is no doubt. The only way this is a great game if Jared Goff, if we see one of those types of games. I believe he'll be able to do that because the offensive line, I believe, was the best offensive line in the playoffs of all the teams. And their overall continuity, they started 17, they started every game this year, including the playoffs, same starting lineup, like no other team we've seen. And I believe that Sean McVay is going to give Jared Goff, especially early in the game, opportunities that he can gain confidence. So I believe that Jared Goff's going to be an elite quarterback. There's other people don't believe that. Most players, 99%, are system players. No other player, absent of Patty Mahomes, has a better support for them to be good than Jared Goff does with Sean McVay, Todd Gurley, that offensive line, and for the style for which they're going to play. So I believe he's going to have a significant impact, just like the last two Super Bowls we've seen where the quarterbacks opposite of Brady have played an elite level.
And even if we go back to a third Super Bowl, Russell Wilson played one hell of a game to lead the Seahawks into that 10-point lead going into the fourth quarter. Once upon a time, you could beat the Patriots in the playoffs without your quarterback playing great. Tom Brady's first four playoff losses in those four games against Jake Plummer, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Joe Flacco, those were the four guys to do it. Four touchdowns, four interceptions. No one with a passer rating above 87, average passer rating are in the mid-70s. The last six, though, that has not been the case. You want to beat the Patriots in the playoffs, your quarterback better play an outstanding game. Tom Brady's last six playoff losses, quarterbacks going up against him, 14 touchdowns, one interception.
Wow.
A passer rating north of 105. Like, as the Patriots have become an offensive-oriented team, if you want to beat them in the playoffs, your offense better show up. So I don't think the Rams have a clear path to victory that doesn't involve Jared Goff playing one of his better games. Now, where Jared Goff should be instilled with a ton of confidence is he's coming off, to me, the best moment of his football career. Not because they won the NFC Championship game, but the way they did it. He had to lead a drive in the Superdome inside of 2 minutes, down three, just to get to overtime.
After
and he did it.
Start.
After a horrendous start with the crowd as loud as it was at the beginning. And he did it. That level of confidence going into this game should serve him well, because he's going to have to play great for the Rams to have a real shot.
All right, let's take a break. There's another team interested in the services of Anthony Davis. Could the Knicks enter the sweepstakes? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, former head coach Eric Mangini is here. Good to have you, coach.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Fantastic.
Let's talk some football. Less than a week away from Super Bowl 53. Tom Brady making his ninth trip to the Super Bowl, third straight at age 41. Jared Goff, first trip at age 24. This is Brady's 19th season in the NFL. For Goff, his third. To say there's an age gap there would be like saying Mangini might watch the Super Bowl if he's home and all. Brady was asked if he had any advice for Goff. Take a listen.
What sort of advice would you give this guy as he gets ready to take on the big bad Patriots?
I'm not giving him any advice. Crazy. They got a great team. I got to go against that guy all night, so that's what I'm concerned about. And I know how great of a player he is. They got a great defense, best D-line in the league, a couple of the best interceptors probably ever playing this game. So I got my work cut out for me.
All right, Coach, how much of the Super Bowl is going to come down to how Jared Goff does actually play?
It's going to be a huge part of the Super Bowl, and for a lot of different reasons. One of the reasons, as a young quarterback, he's got to come out early and decipher how the Patriots are playing against him. And we saw that problem that Patrick Mahomes had last week or a couple weeks ago where he couldn't figure it out early enough. Yep. He got it figured out later, and he saw how effective he was. But that's the first thing. And then another big part of this offense is coming to the line of scrimmage, and there's check with me plays. So it's either we're going to stay in the play that we have called, or we're going to check to the second play based off the look. So deciphering what's happening and confirming either to stay in a good play or to get out of that play and move into something else because it's a better look is another huge thing. And then will he make a mistake? The amount of pressure that this game has, how well does he deal with that? Obviously, Tom has a huge, huge advantage in that arena. But how well does he deal with that is the third thing. And I'd say the last thing is there were some really big plays that he made at the end of the New Orleans game. I thought he made some fantastic.
Right.
The one where he made where he's rolling out to his right and hit the tight end down the field, and then two different plays with pressure right in his face that he completed. difference in the game. So all those things are factors moving to this one.
I think it should be instructive for people to understand that the Patriots, this decade, they've only lost 6 playoff games. All 6 of those playoff games, the opposing quarterback has played well, and in 5 of the 6 has played really well. The only one that I would say wasn't really well was Peyton Manning's last game against Tom Brady, the 2018 AFC Championship game. But those quarterbacks combined 14 touchdowns to 1 interception, a quarterback rating north of 105. Like, you haven't beaten the Patriots with a poor quarterback performance in the playoffs since all the way back in 09 when Joe Flacco had a terrible game, but the Ravens beat him up 33-14. Like, early in Tom Brady's career, Jake Plummer beat him without playing very well. Eli in that first Super Bowl against the undefeated Pats, he played okay but didn't play great. Like, this decade, you've needed your quarterback to be a difference maker, whether it was Flacco in the AFC Championship game in 2012. Nick Foles, obviously, last year played the best game of his life. I don't think the Rams, even though I really respect their defense and I think Todd Gurley is the best running back in football, I don't think they can win the game with Jared Goff just being a caretaker. I think Jared Goff is going to have to go out there and make some plays. And I, like you, Coach, was so impressed with the drive at the end of regulation. We have forgotten it because it's just, oh, the Saints got screwed. The Saints got screwed. Jared Goff in the Superdome, down 3, inside of 2 minutes, trip to the Super Bowl on the line, drove his team down to the 31-yard line to set up that 48-yard field goal to put the game into overtime. I thought that was big-time stuff from a play. That was the biggest spot of his career, and he came through.
Why is it even in the conversation that Jared Goff and caretaker are in the same sentence, or game manager? Why does he sometimes get that reputation?
Well, for one, it's how he started his career, and it's how, when the Rams aren't playing well, you look at the script afterwards, and typically Jared Goff, those aren't his best games. I think that there's a certain people that watch the game, either like Jared Goff or you don't like him, but they have all these preconceived what he's going to be like as an NFL quarterback. I think he's going to be an elite player for a long, long time because they built that team the right way. They got explosive players on the defense. They got a great young head coach that's going to be tied to that guy. And ever since he's got there, all they have done is win games. So I think that people, they don't allow players to develop anymore, and they definitely don't allow quarterbacks to develop. So we want a guy to be seasoned. We want a guy to make veteran decisions. And we see veterans all the time make mistakes, but younger players were just more critical, and we're so quick to who's going to be a superstar and who's a franchise quarterback and who's not a franchise quarterback. There's a thing called process. There's a thing called player development, and Jared Goff is right in the middle of being one of the elite passers that we have in the game. He's got a great arm. He makes great decisions. He can read coverages. He had one of those run-pass options in the New Orleans game after reading McVay's clips after the game. He said that audible of to Brandon Cooks down the sideline was one of the better throws and decisions Jared Goff's made in a very young career. But Bill Belichick, I think, is 17-0 against quarterbacks under the age of 25. So Jared Goff at 24, he is getting ready to be tested. But for me, I think he's going to be an elite quarterback in this league, and he has a great system to be able to help him develop under.
Belichick teams have won 18 games in a row against quarterbacks under the age of 25, and Jared Goff's obviously in that category.
Yeah, and Chris, you're right on about people who want to classify quarterbacks as Hall of Famers instantly, like the second they make a good play. But with Jared Goff, I thought the other interesting thing from last game was New Orleans was going to heat him up. So their principle early was, if we can hit him early and get him off his game, then we've got a real chance to disrupt him throughout the course of the game. And he made a mistake early, but he came back, and the poise that he showed under pressure in terms of blitzes, not the pressure of the moment, I thought was very impressive. Now, it's not going to be like that necessarily in New England. It's going to be assessing how they move the pieces apart and what subtleties they're attacking in your game.
Coach Mangini will tell you, when you get to the Super Bowl, too, you know the characteristics of the team. So if you try to protect the quarterback in this game, the players feel it, and they start to press. Defense feels like, forget about being patient. I need to make a big play. Wide receivers, like, maybe I need to break my route off into a deep route to make a big play. So the quarterback stabilizing the team is important. And what Jared Goff did in struggling opening in last week's game, NFC Championship, and coming out of that, that sent a huge message to the team.
And your point of him dealing with the pressure of a blitz, pressure of human beings out of a moment, that's what I was so impressed with, because Jared Goff this year, every quarterback is worse under pressure than not under pressure. But you can, we have a ranking 1 through 32 of what their quarterback rating is when pressured. Jared Goff was 28th in the league in that category. That was his biggest weakness of his game, is if you can get to him, he can't deal with the situation. In that NFC Championship game, he did in the biggest spots. He's going to have to in the Super Bowl.
And the other thing that is the pressure of the moment, too. And, yeah, and we talk about this with, mm-hmm, with guys who signed big free agent contracts or guys who are in games like this. You don't need to be different than who you are and what brought you here. Sometimes people think, I've got to be better. And in an attempt to do that, it ends up being worse. Just be who you are.
It's the advice I gave you when you joined on here. And it's been really working out for you. So
you're right, the pressure of that
you
moment.
Be you, Coach. You be you. Thanks. Coach, stick around. Coming up, did the Rams shoot themselves in the foot at Media Day? That's next on First Things
it's
First.
It's so funny because it's the exact opposite Chris and I keep giving Jenna. Don't be you. You got to try to be someone different.
On Friday, a Big Ten doubleheader tips off on FS1. First, Michigan battles Iowa at 6:30 Eastern, then Maryland takes on Wisconsin at 9. Big Ten college hoops action Friday on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
It pains me to say it, but I think my man Chris Carter was right. Michigan is a basketball school these days. Pains me to say it, but I think it's true.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot of body pains throughout your life.
All right, back here with Coach Mangini. Yesterday, the Rams and Patriots were introduced to the media ahead of Super Bowl 53, and it was Nickell Robey-Coleman who made the biggest news earlier in the day with his comments about Tom Brady. Coleman said this about arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. Age has definitely taken a toll. For him to still be doing it, that's a great compliment for him, but I think that he's definitely not the same quarterback that he was. So Coleman backtracked a bit when asked about his comments on opening night. Take a listen.
Tom Brady is a great quarterback. I wasn't trying to say nothing bad about him. I respect him as the GOAT. He is the legend, and I think words just got misconstrued. I'm not taking nothing away from his game. I can't take nothing away from his game. This is my first appearance. He's been in this place many of times, in this position many of times. So I'm not going to make a big deal out of this situation. Like I said, words got taken out of context. I respect them. And we're going to go out there on Sunday and we're going to play football.
All right, Coach, first of all, was that bulletin board material? And second of all, should the Rams be doing anything to jolt Tom Brady and the Patriots any more than they already are, have been adopted the role of underdogs at this point?
Well, I'd love to follow up with what got taken out of context? Which part was misconstrued about the things that you said? And
point blank.
Yeah, I don't really understand that part. And look, I don't know why anybody would want to poke the bear. And I don't think Tom Brady needs any more motivation. I think that going into this game, it's the biggest game of most people's lives. And everybody is trying to be the best form of themselves and has worked as hard as they possibly can to prepare. But to reconfirm the narrative that New England's been riding for the couple weeks here, it's unnecessary. There's no reason to give them anything to talk about. There's no reason to taunt Tom. And especially since you're covering Julian Edelman in the slot, and he can easily, you know, make you look really bad really quickly.
So, but as far as this adding extra motivation for Brady, we all agree he is operating at peak motivation, correct? Like that
it's, yeah, the but it's just he's been saying we're underdogs. He's been saying people take us for granted or think we're too slow or too old or whatever it is. And this just is a little confirmation of what he's been saying.
Sure, but to assume this adds to Brady's motivation, just logically speaking, means if Nickell Rovey Coleman didn't say this, there was some motivation factor available to Tom Brady. I'm operating under the assumption that Tom Brady, in every Super Bowl, if not every football game he plays, but certainly every playoff game and Super Bowl, is at peak motivation capacity. The tank is full. This isn't an example of Michael Jordan finding a newspaper clipping to get himself ready to go for a game against the Denver Nuggets in February. Like, this is an athlete that is as self-motivated as any athlete I've ever seen in a sport that has the fewest number of games in the biggest game of the season. Now, I do think that if the Patriots win, Nickell Rovey Coleman's going to hear, like, his quote spit back at him, or you're going to hear Brady and Edelman saying something.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be his fault. It's going to be his fault the reason why they lose.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't think Tom Brady can be more motivated than he already was going to be for this game.
As an athlete, in real time, it don't matter. It doesn't matter. Because it's impossible for you to think about the task at hand and to try to put that information into it that would make you do your job better. No one has more experience at the Super Bowl than Tom Brady. And to think that he needs this to be able to keep him focused, no, he doesn't. He knows where he's at on the field. It's not as if he hadn't faced him before. He played with Buffalo 13 season, 14 season, 15 season, 16 season. He played against Tom Brady 8 times in 4 years. So he's been on the field, played a lot of football. He's seen Tom Brady. And the part about Tom Brady getting older, yes, Tom Brady's gotten older. This wasn't a great season. Now, Father Time is having a battle with Tom Brady. So I as a player, know it wouldn't motivate me. And I would just be shocked to think someone like Tom Brady is going to motivate him.
Well, I guess I looked at it a little bit differently when I first heard it. I looked at it as not necessarily motivating Tom Brady, but underestimating Tom Brady. And a little bit from his perspective of, if you really think that he's diminished that much, are you going in giving him the respect that you should give to a guy like Tom Brady? So yeah. I looked at it as a little bit of his perspective being skewed. And then also, you know that you don't do it, so I looked at it as, shouldn't that have been something?
Well, I'm going to tell you why you do it. I'm going to tell you why. Because when you get in games like this, you end up interviewing. Have you ever heard about him before? I've heard about him because I've been covering the league. Coach has heard about him. Nick heard about him. But how many times have you seen him doing a press conference? Not many times. He's been playing off in Buffalo. Hadn't been in many playoff games.
So your point is he doesn't have the media training that some of the other guys do.
They're not used to talking. And I'm going to tell you, a lot of times happens in a situation like this. The coaches will get us a set of clips. When you have someone that has legendary status like Tom Brady, I ain't going to show you 10 of his greatest throws. Let me show you 10 throws that would let you know, hey, man, we can get this guy. Let me show you things right here of what Tom Brady did that would generate confidence. And then you come into your interview and you say,
and that's what's top of mind.
Yes.
And well, the other thing is this, and here's why I'll defend Rovey Coleman a bit, even if the comments were unnecessary. Tell me where, spot the lie. Age has definitely taken a toll. I believe that to be true. For him to still be doing it, that's a great compliment for him. I believe that to be true. But I think that he's definitely not the same quarterback he was. I believe that to be true. Like,
right.
Does
he can't be the same quarterback that he faced in 13, 14,
right.
15 when Buffalo, what he was doing to Buffalo.
Now, at no point did he say, and in fact, I think he's a below average quarterback. And in fact, I think he's the weak link on the team. He didn't say any of those things. I think everything he said there is accurate. And so that's where he says, taken out of context. I think he means, I wasn't trying to slap the man in the face. I was given an evaluation of what I'm seeing.
I think Coach Mangini makes a great point talking about, regardless, even if we feel that way, should there be a higher degree of respect for Tom Brady? Now, that part I can agree with. I don't believe Tom will be motivated by it. But when you get into a game like this, there should be. You want to be as quiet as a church mouse in stuff like this. Like, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to be as vanilla of any interviews I've ever done. But That comes through seasoning. This is not a guy that's used to doing a bunch of interviews.
When we were 14-2, it was late in the season. We were playing a team. I forget who it was, Jacksonville, and they had almost a reverse record. And Bill came in, and he showed a bunch of clips. And I walked out of that room, and I was talking to my wife, Julie. She said, "How's it look?" And I said, "Oh, my God, these guys look really, really good." Because, and she's like, "What? What are you talking about?" Because that's what Bill would do is he would show all the things that they had the potential to do, because as a group, he didn't want us to underestimate our opponent at any point, in whether it was a team mm-hmm. like that or in this moment, because the one time that you let down, the one time that you think I can relax against you, is the one time that could be the difference in the game. And going into a game without anything but absolute respect for every single person you're playing may give you that pause in the moment that's the difference mm-hmm. between going down in history as the winner or, you know, an asterisk. Like absolutely.
And what you guys needed to do when you're 14-2 and playing a terrible team is almost trick the players into believing, man, this team's really good. I think what Chris's point was, if you are going up against a team that's been to 9 Super Bowls, that has the greatest quarterback of all time, you don't want your players going to the game saying, man, if I make really one mistake, good. The game's over. Like these guys, you want them to feel like they are beatable. Now, maybe you don't want to go too far with it, but you don't want the Pats to have the mental edge of they are this juggernaut. I think that's the point about showing the bad plays when you're playing a team like them.
All right, Coach, thanks. Coming up, should the Lakers throw in Lonzo, Kuzma, and Ingram for Anthony Davis, or more or less? That's next on First Things First.
They need to throw in the Santa Monica Pier.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.